three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff wraps it up.
All right, gentlemen. It's a three-way. We haven't done this for years. We did this one maybe a year and a half ago. We did something like this. Joe Core here. I've got Andrew Canyon, and you may have just heard a little rumble there. We got Buddy Nodge. Buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing extremely well. Thank you for your kind inquiry.
And Andrew, how are you?
I'm well, mate. This is fun. I've been looking forward to this show, and hopefully the listeners will also enjoy it.
Oh, this is brutal.
As I said, we do our best.
I beg the listeners, bear with us. We're over a conference call. If we talk over each other or muck up, you know why. But we're bringing you the goods. Gentlemen, I'm going to start straight off. I'm going to ask this big question. I sent you a list of questions during the week, but it was actually earlier today. So very little preparation time. But here we go. Let's just go straight up. Championship tips. We've seen game one. I want to know who's winning and why. I'm going to start with you, Andrew Canyon. Who's winning and why?
Okay, so I've set myself up here because I had said in our last show that Tasmania would get there on the basis of their big men. And that didn't play out too well in that first game. So I've got to say I'm a little bit worried now. We had Lee was basically ineffectual. Then he got hurt. Magne was okay but couldn't make a free throw. And he was nowhere near what he was against Perth. So just on that basis, I think I'm having to switch camps. I think I'm going to have to say Melbourne. And that's not even getting into the guards.
Yeah,
so
well.
The Jack Jumper jerseys come off and the United ones tucked in.
Look, I love the Jack Jumpers. I love everything they represent, everything they stand for, the way they go about their business. I think Scott Roth is terrific. I believe they're going to win game two and then they're going to lose the series in four because Melbourne is just too deep. And the thing with Melbourne is you can have someone that doesn't play a great game and they're still okay. But with the Jack Jumpers, they've been carrying Jordan Crawford for more than a few weeks. And basically they need everyone to play well. And when they do, they're fantastic to watch and they're very successful. But when they don't, and Melbourne absolutely took them out of what they wanted to do, in the game one, because their depth just kept coming at them. And, yeah, I just go along with Andrew too, the big man situation. After what Sam Froling from Illawarra did to Joe Achul and Ariel Hartporti, I was expecting more of the same from Will Magne, and instead we got pretty much nothing out of the two Tasmania centers, and probably got more out of Fabian Kreslovich, if we're going to be honest.
It was disappointing. What do you think happened with the centers? Do you think it was stage fright on the grand final, or was it they, you know, just JLA and Hartporti were better?
Well, for mine, it was Michael Aitlin, the referee, because the moment that Will Magne dropped his shoulder, which is probably a bit of a mistake, and knocked Kyle Bowen to the floor, which was, you know, he looked like he was shot from a great height. So he gets a foul for that, that's fine. And then he turns around to Bowen and he says a few words, probably along the lines of, you know, that was pretty ordinary, but, you know, maybe with stronger language. And Michael Aitlin races in and gives him a tech foul. Now, that's two fouls straight there. And then two or three minutes later, he gets a third foul, also Michael Aitlin's call, when he was boxing out Joe Luelichul. He's got an arm around Joe Luelichul and Joe Luelichul's got an arm around him. So that is a no call. But let's get back to the tech foul. It's game one of a grand final. Everybody's excited, everybody's emotional, everybody's tense. So he says something to this guy that's flopped, and Aitlin, instead of just coming in and saying, hey, cool it, you know, don't want to hear that stuff, let's get on with it, giving him a warning, bam, straight away, oh, tech foul. And it's a referee with the experience of Michael Aitlin. That was pretty ordinary, especially when you consider that a little later, Ian Clark taunted Anthony Drimmick. And the referee that was on hand, I think it was Vaughan Mabry, basically told him to pull his head in, and on we went. So I think that was impactful on the centers. That, and I thought Marcus Lee, he didn't show up. I'm not giving him anything any props for the shoulder. He didn't show up. There were times that Sean McDonald drove on that pick and roll and was looking for him, and he wasn't there.
Yeah, wow. Can I have a quick departure here, Boddy? And going back to the refs, you've written about the refs for a long time and written complimentary in the past about Michael Aylin.
Yeah.
Tell me where he stacks up and this current crop of referees, where they stack up against, say, let's go back to like Mel Cooper. And then before that, what's his name? He's got that great name. I'm totally blanking.
Bill Mildenhall.
No.
You got Bill Mildenhall, you got Ray Hunt, Eddie Crouch. There's heaps of them. They were great refs.
So who's the best ref of the past? What made them good? And if these other ones today are failing, what's the difference? What's the failure?
I think that for me, it's very hard to split between the guys we just mentioned, because Bill Mildenhall came from a VFL career, pre-AFL. He was playing VFL for St Kilda.
Right.
And so he had a real understanding already of the sportsman's mentality when he switched to becoming a referee. So his ability to communicate with players, you know, has always been second to none. So you didn't see him, if he gave somebody a tech foul, you knew they were really way over the line. And Ray Hunt, again, another good ref. These guys refed with common sense, and they were able to banter with players. And everybody knew where the line was. You know, like, you didn't step over the line. These days, players are allowed to get away with far too much, and so are coaches in a lot of instances. And I think this is all part of the idea that today the sport has to be entertainment first, not sport first. And that's where I think the whole thing is losing track of the direction it wants to go. Well, that is the direction it wants to go. So referees are more lenient, and they're basically not as good as a consequence of that.
You'd have to say that Vaughn Mabry is today's Mal Cooper, right? They both love a camera. They're ready to show up for it. It almost feels like it's their show rather than the game.
I think Vaughn Mabry has makeup before the game, so I think that speaks to how I'm not sure about that. I could be wrong, Vaughn, if I'm doing you an injustice. You've just got very good bone structure.
Yeah, Mal Cooper loved a charge block call. Hey, back in the day. He put a lot of sauce on his calls. But I think overall they were better. I'm old enough that I remember those blokes running around as well. And they were, I reckon they just had a better feel for the game, like Boddy said.
Well, I'm going to throw a dagger down here. I think you're right, Boddy, in the sense that those guys had a sporting background, a player's background, and understood the line and could actually hold to the line and not just say there's the line and puff their chest out, but also take the flack before the line, if you know what I mean. They didn't have the sort of real nasally, nerdy behavior. And I think that's the sort of mind that the sports admin attracts now. I've seen it from a media standpoint, where very few former players get on camera, and that's different. But in those press conferences, I'm not seeing a lot of broad shoulders. I'm seeing super fans who've found their way into being into the media. And I actually see it, as you say, or not as you say, but yeah, in the reffing quarters where, you know, these guys aren't former players that have done it. And it doesn't have to be a former player necessarily, but, you know, have that sporting background and that sort of understanding what goes on between the lines. And, I just think it's the refs now are a little bit kind of, it's like a Benny Hill sketch. It's like, oh, no running on the grass. It's very by the book and not with that feeling. But yeah. Maybe it's just me.
But to Andrew's point about the refs, you know, like that whole thing, when there's a side ball, every ref's got to do that arm gesture that, oh, don't make a plane, you know. It's like, it's tiresome. Just get on with it. The old refs, when they made a call that they knew a player didn't like and might have been a bit contentious, they didn't hover around the player, you know. They knew that the player was going to have a bit to say. They would leave. They would leave the area. Now, these days, the refs, when they make a contentious call, or let's call it what it is, a bad call, and they know they have, they hover around waiting to hear if the player's going to swear and carry.
They court the controversy. Yeah, absolutely. I do. Mm. Yeah, bait it almost.
Exactly, and that's wrong, but that's all part of entertainment. It's the entertainment package.
You really think it's a wanting to be that entertainment factor, not just a misunderstanding of like what players want? Okay, fair enough.
It's not sport anymore, mate. It's entertainment. When every single player carries the ball dribbling it, when you can travel left, right and centre, you know, and when you can decide as a referee, oh, that might be a charge, it might be a block, and you're only going to get, you know, you're only going to be shown to be wrong, what, once maybe in a game. I just think that the whole opportunity to influence games is far greater now because of this.
Well, let's talk about that. I was going to go on a different question. I'm going to bring this one up. Statman, who we all followed on Twitter and some of us knew personally, father quite ceremoniously and publicly departed the NBL, was a long servant of stat keeping and funky, interesting stats. He's gone. In a tweet, he cites, you know, the NBL's at a crossroads of its original ethos and selflessness and kind of about the sport, and he was irritated at the financial push of it all. I'll start with you, Boddy. Like, do you think that's a fair criticism of the way things have gone? And was the past NBL sustainable, where Andrew Gaze, its star player, was completely unpaid? You know, like, where's the healthy balance? I just don't know.
Andrew was unpaid because he was selfless in that, and he knew his club only had limited resources, so he made money out of in other ways, you know, with endorsements, with sponsorships. He was probably on more than most of the players, but he was getting nothing in the salary. It was very cleverly orchestrated by him, and very selfless to make sure that they could afford the other players. Look, I've known Statman since he was jumping down the stat poles with the cape flying in the background. He's a terrific guy and loved basketball, loved the NBL with such passion that when you lose the people that are passionate about the game, that's not a reflection of them. That's a reflection of the way the game's going. So when you ask the question, are we going in a wrong direction? In some areas, we are. In the fact that we're beyond the league is beyond criticism. If you criticize something, then you're attacked as being, you know, grumpy or something's wrong with you. It's because everybody's wearing these rose-colored glasses, saying how great everything is. It's great, mate. That's great. And well, you know, it can't always be that, surely.
Right. Okay, Andrew.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm a bit of a fan of politics in my part time as well. For some reason, I enjoy watching that sideshow, that game. This strikes me as we are now well and truly in the neoliberal era of basketball.
Ooh.
So
go on. Hear that, buddy? Hear that? You're getting this for free.
Okay, you come to my lecture next week, buddy, and I'll give you a copy of my manifesto.
Right, soapbox is built. Get on top.
So basically, you've got a structure where you have a trickle-down economic system set up, where you have the big teams, the Melbourne, Perths, Sydney. Sydney. Thank you. The big teams, they succeed, and the success then theoretically dribbles down to all the other teams. And everybody wins through the magic of neoliberalism in a basketball context. But this doesn't really happen. We've got the Hawks with no sponsorship. We've got Brisbane just kind of meandering along. Adelaide have been a bit of a basket case recently. I think the foundation is a lot more precipitous than people might want to make it out to be. So I think it's a terrible thing. I think, like what he said, you lose the people who love the sport, and you replace it with hollow men who love the money and the showiness and the ability to climb ladders, and you find yourself in a dangerous position.
I think it's a combination of what you both said. I'm not going to use words like neoliberalism, but I love it. I personally think the thing is the NBL has gone, the money's in the casual fan. The money's in the casual fan. And like you said, Boddy, if your moral compass isn't passion for the sport, you know, you want to have your moral compass in the direction of passionate fans, but you always want to be inclusive of the casual fan. Right now, that dial is completely switched where it's casual fan at every opportunity, you know, make the game so easily understood that everyone can get it. And you need a bit of exclusivity. If there's no exclusivity on the content, it's not an antique. It doesn't feel special. And there's an element of that. I think it straddles the line of both of what you said there.
I got to say, I enjoy it less than I used to. Yeah. Now, that may be a product of getting older. I don't know. I feel like the Wizard of Oz, you know, you have the big great Oz is kind of this amazing thing. And that's how I sort of saw the league. And now I feel like the curtain's been pulled back a little bit. And behind it all, there's just a little man. Sorry, Larry.
Buddy, same question. Are you okay with the size of Mr. Oz?
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was looking up precipitous to see exactly what that means. Forget neoliberalism. I don't know what's going on here. No, look,
Are you having fun with it? But are you having fun at the league? And if so, buddy, what do you have fun?
I actually enjoyed the season quite a lot. I'll tell you straight up. I'll tell you what I hate and then what I love. Watching the games, I hate the Harlem Globetrotters. I hate the Noble Tour. I hate the NBL app. I hate every bit of bullshit that they're going to foist on us twice every game. I hate that crap. I hate when they're doing Harvey Norman replays during live action. Now that I've got all the hated stuff out, what I love is that the game's competitive. The players have been terrific. We've had guys emerging like Dave O'Hickey and Sean McDonald, and I love seeing that. Yeah. Well, Jack McGay, I'll mention him later when we talk about another area. But just basically seeing all these young players emerging up in Cairns, a bunch of them as well. You know, I'm loving that. I am really enjoying that. Mm. I don't get excited about the level of import that we have because we've had better imports and all that stuff about, oh, it's the best of all time. Oh, that's bullshit. Okay. And you know, you've only got to go through a few of them. Like, compare a Jordan Usher to some import Perth had 5-6 years ago, and he'll come up like Casey Prather in his prime. He'll come up looking really bad. So don't let's be talking about how great the imports are, but the level of the Aussie talent is pretty good, and some of these next stars aren't too bad. Some of them are a total waste of time. But, you know, I actually am enjoying the games. I don't like it when the referees are playing too big a role.
I can all agree with that. Let's move on to this one. Andrew, I'm going to start with you. Biggest success this season, player, team, league? Like, was it when the league signed that Japanese deal? Was it the emergence of Jack McVay? What has, for you, been the biggest success this season?
Jeez, the Japanese deal.
Do you remember that?
I didn't expect that one to be taken up as an example.
I just plucked it out of the sky. I was like, they have made that announcement, and I don't think there has been a single concrete consequence of that outcome. But anyway, what do you think?
I'm still waiting for my playing cards and my NFTs. Don't worry about it. You know, trading cards, you know. Look, I think the biggest success this season, from a player perspective, Boddy mentioned him. I hope I'm not stealing your thunder. I chose Jack McVay as the biggest player success this season. He's turned himself into a cornerstone player of the league, potential boomer. I think I would look seriously at him over somebody like Chris Golding at this point. He's a solid four-man in a league where there's not a lot of four-man depth, and he's just been a great player and a great club man. So from a bigger success of a player, it's got to be Jack McVay. I've got another
actually,
success
before,
from
we'll
a
come
team
back to
perspective
the team
as
ones,
well.
I just want, now that Boddy, Andrew has stolen your thunder, but perhaps you've got some precipitous left, thunder, rain. What was your success story of the year?
I've got two. Jack McVay is one of them for sure. The thing with Jack is that when he gets rolling and he takes a three and he misses it, that's when I'm surprised. You know, you're just so used to seeing him make it, and he makes big shots, and I'm all for putting him in the boomers as a shooter because he brings so much more. And there are some guys that are being classified as shooters, like a Chris Golding, who just sort of go, well, what else are you bringing? Like, are you bringing some defense? You're bringing some rebounding. Flopping doesn't count for much in the international game. So that's where Jack, I think you've got to start looking at him in the green and gold. The other one that I have been very impressed with just quietly, I thought when he made the decision to leave Perth to go to Melbourne, it wasn't a smart one, but it actually was a brilliant one, and that's Luke Travers. I think he's just done so well this year that you don't notice it within the context of how good that team is. But, geez, there's been a lot of games where he's been the difference maker. So that's my guys, Luke and Jack.
Well, I just want to jump on that.
What have you got,
Joe?
Well,
I'm just sort of curator of this conversation between the two, but I want to jump on that Jack McVay thing, and I think a conversation with him that's been undervalued is the role that a coach can have on a player's career, both good and bad. It's very seldom discussed. It's often discussed in a good way, you know, Vickerman turning around Trev, but it can also be the other way. And that's why coaches get a lot of flack. I mean, Jack McVay under Connor Henry at 36ers, his career was over. He was not playing. He was on the end of the bench, frustrated, broken, and then goes to Scott Roth, gets a different chance. That's not necessarily a condemnation of Connor Henry. I think it probably is, but not necessarily. Sometimes it just doesn't click. They don't see the value. They don't have that foresight that maybe Scott Roth had. But I think, you know, that's where the criticism of coaches. Often when a player is ill-content or upset, people are like, oh, he's a locker room cancer. Like Angus Glover at Sydney this year. everyone was like, oh, he's causing trouble. Mm-hmm. He's calling people out. Yeah, well, maybe the coach was shit and their players needed it, you know? So yeah. I'm always like, yeah, oh, maybe he's not a locker room cancer. So I'd love to see a little bit more writing or coverage in that vein where it's like, well, no, maybe there is an issue. And he said, never going to happen. Andrew, you said you had a second one. Far away.
Yeah, I do. My second one is a team which could benefit the league, and that's the Illawarra Bulldogs. Silly as it is. Sorry, buddy. Sorry, mate. Look, goes to show great minds think alike, right? I think as much as it was made out as if the Hawks had just been dreadful forever, they haven't been. They played really well under Gorgian and went a long way. So this is very short memory saying they've always been terrible. But they were terrible last year. I think now they have a future. They might even get a naming rights sponsor if they play it right, which would be incredible. The thing that gets me about Tatum, right? Now, this is one I'm kind of going to pose it and ask Boddy's opinion because I think he's got might have a good perspective. I see Tatum as taking a Cal Bruton approach to coaching in that he's probably not necessarily the best coach, X's and O's wise, but he's the best style for the time. So Cal Bruton was fantastic. You know, he had the late 80s, early 90s. You got it. You got it. And that just became an ethos. And it still hangs around now. I think Tatum is the equivalent for this era. I'd be curious to know what either of you think about that.
Yeah, well, so you're saying he's better than CJ Bruton? Because if that's what you're saying, I'm with you 100%. No, I'm sorry. And just back up to Jack McVay under Connor Hawkins. Connor Henry. What about Keanu Pinder under Connor Henry? Like, there was a lot of people.
Good point. He was a joke.
Yeah, he got a lot of people wrong. Yep. Anyway, let's get to this point. Yeah, I think he is. What I like about him is just an honest coach. Like, okay, there are areas where I know that he knows he's deficient, but he trusts his assistants, and the way he's gone about bringing the best out of those players has been a joy to watch. You know, and that's what I've liked, because early in the season when they were still under Jacob Jackass and they were doing terribly, I was looking at their personnel and thinking that personnel is good enough to contend. So Jacob's the man that's getting this wrong. And then all they needed was somebody to come in and give them the confidence and the self-belief and the direction. And suddenly, you know, you've got as I mentioned him earlier, a William Dave O'Hickey who's come out of the woodwork and like, oh, wow, who knew that he could play? Well, nobody if they were watching JJ coaching. But, yeah, it's been fun to watch what Justin's been able to bring out of them. But I think he recognises that he's a good coach, excellent in certain areas and maybe deficient in others, but he trusts his assistants, and I think they've got it right.
Right. There you go. Staying with the Hawks. Let's move on to this one. We've had success of the season, player, team, league, or otherwise. Let's go fails. So where has a player or a team or the league failed in your eyes? Let's go again. Start with you, Andrew.
No. Buddy, go first. I don't want to steal any more thunder.
I'm still excited about this whole Japanese deal.
What did it entail? Like, no players have swapped. Well, Cooks has now signed with Sydney, so maybe that was some shortfall of it. I think it was just a press release. That's all that was. Just, oh, we've had a conversation. Most of it misunderstood due to the cultural difference, but here's a tweet. It was weird.
Yeah.
Take it away, buddy.
All right. So what are we looking at now is who was disappointing?
Fails.
Aaron Buttons. That's it.
And why do you...
Because he's
Buddy, you stole my thunder.
Thank goodness I got in first on these. Well, look.
Luckily, I've got plenty of precipitous to go around, so you're okay.
All right. Well, look, this is a guy who's an NBA champion who has had a reasonably decent NBA career. Not outstanding, but he's had his great games, and he was good at Boston for a period. You know, I'd say Olympian. Played a couple of Olympics. You always expected he was going to make a massive impact in this league along the lines of Andrew Bogut when he first arrived. Yeah. And he's never been near that. And then this year he degenerated into, you know, that whole incident with Lap Mayen and shoving his own teammates away. And look, he's obviously had some very deep and serious personal issues. And I don't think the club did much to help him. They basically, you know, he was out suspended and they brought him straight back. I think he might have needed to have a bit of a longer break and just think about whether he wants to play or not, because there were a lot of times I thought he didn't want to play. And then there are other games where I thought, just give him the ball. Just get your four out and let him roam from block to block to foul line to block to block to foul line and pass it into him, because he's a willing passer. If they were double, he'd kick it out to the outside shooter. But they didn't do that. They didn't get any benefit from him. So basically, if you're not getting benefit, then you're getting the opposite. And I think Aaron Baines' time in our league might be over.
Yeah, a bit sad.
Like, who was better, buddy, Aaron Baines or Grant Kruger?
Because
that's about the same level of play.
Yeah, but if you're talking about contribution to their team in the NBL, Grant Kruger by a long way.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, for those who remember, he was like an enforcer player from a long time ago that never really did a lot, but, well, smashed a lot of bodies.
And one time they had a 3-on-3 tournament, and I saw him playing that, and he was just focused on playing 3-on-3, and I thought, this guy can actually really play. It's funny how, you know, you get pigeonholed to play a certain role, and that's the role he played. But no, I thought in terms of value to his teams, you know, you always knew that he was there protecting you. And whereas with Aaron, I'm half sort of thinking, if you're a teammate, you wonder if you might get a clip behind the ear yourself.
It was the aggression and the looking to the refs, and, you know, we'd get hit. And normally what would bounce off him being so big, it got to him, and he was always looking to the refs for a bit of help and a bit of leg up. And it's just the first sign of a career that's, in decline. He can still be of value, but I don't think at the amount they're paying him and in the way he might think so. It's going to be a real interesting to see if he returns at all or in what capacity. We'll see. Andrew, fail this season?
Yeah, so I had Aaron Baines for all the same reasons, obviously. The one other thing I just mentioned about Aaron is that, because I pile on time, his three-point shot, he continued to believe that he was a reasonable three-point shooter. It's always been looked ugly as. But it used to work in the NBA, and it just has never translated.
Hey, quick one question without notice: NBL. Who's got the ugliest 3-point shot? Aaron Baines, Kyle
Dellavedova,
or Matthew Dellavedova? Okay, fine.
I'm saying Dellavedova.
I didn't even get to him. You already had him.
Yeah, Dellavedova for sure.
But the amount of times I've watched that Dellavedova shot, and even in slow motion, trying to figure out how he actually moves his body and contorts his arm in that way,
I don't understand it. It sums it up for me. I was out the other day, it was 40-degree heat, and I saw a guy changing a tire on the side of the freeway, and the face he was pulling as he was trying to undo the lug nuts was exactly the same face Dellavedova makes on the three-point shot. That's my answer. Just the strain, the gritted teeth, not pretty at all. Buddy, you got the same answer, or you were going someone else?
Yeah, that's where I was going. He was one. His is ugly but effective, whereas the other two, they're just ugly.
Fails. We don't want to pile on anyone else.
Fail.
Come on, Canyon. Hit me.
I got one more fail. I got another one. So from a team perspective, obviously, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
Yeah. What's the buddy? I'm going to ask you. Just, how does this team turn it around? What do you think we're going? But Andrew, go on. This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, they had bad imports, didn't they? Sack an import again. This is the guy that didn't go to the community stuff. So they got that wrong again. And the imports that they ended up with, plus most of them, the Australian contingent, except maybe Mitch Creek, never really got going. No. It seemed like the coaching never really got going. The jury is still really well and truly out on Mike Kelly. I think he might be a great guy, but not a great coach. I just think that whole organization is just a massive, massive fail. The fact they don't even wear green as their primary uniform color is yet another fail.
Speak to the failure, but also what's the road ahead? What's the road ahead for the second best team in Melbourne?
All right. Well, look, when we started this fail section, first team I wrote down was Brisbane. And then I wrote, oh, wait a minute, no, Southeast Melbourne were pretty bloody awful. And then I wrote down, oh, wait a minute, Sydney Kings were pretty, if we're talking fail, they were going for a three-peat. Where'd they end up? First team out of the play-in tournament. I actually have Sydney as the biggest fail because when you're going for a three-peat, you really want to look like you're trying to get it done. And they were basically just trying to make it into the playoffs. So I actually have them a little bit worse because their potential to be a contender was far greater than Southeast Melbourne at any time, even when they had their MVP caliber players as described by what's his name, Felix, when he said, oh, they've missing MVP players, and the camera went to Craig Moller and Alan Williams. And I thought, oh, yeah, there's a couple of studs there. Anyway, Sydney had a team to contend. South East Melbourne never did. So South East Melbourne just being god-awful was something that, you know, from about halfway through the season you could expect. And the fact that they were able to, a couple of times with really diminished lineups, pull off major upsets over Sydney twice, I think, and Perth, yeah. I think that does sort of stand them in good stead. So if we're going to talk about them as a what's the future for them, honestly, I think it's – I don't know. They've already got rid of Williams.
So I think getting rid of Williams is probably the right decision.
But Mitch Creek won't be going back there. I'll tell you that now. Okay. Maybe we're breaking news, but Mitch Creek will not be with South East Melbourne next season. Now, whether he's in the NBL at all, that's still to be decided, but he won't be there. So if you take out your marquee Australian, they're going to be in worse shape than what they were this year unless major things happen. Their management structure is is a bit of a worry when your CEO also is a part owner. You know, he's not going to sack himself. But if you look at the players that they've recruited over the journey, somebody should have sacked him. Mm. You know, I love Tommy Greer, great bloke, understands the game, understands talent, but he hasn't been able to put together anything there that's resembled a contender. And what is it now, 6 years? 7 years? Yeah. And we're looking, turn back and look at Tasmania. I know they're the freak show of all time, but 3 years in the league, starting from nothing to grand final, semi-final, grand final is extraordinary and shows it can be done.
And at least they have an identity. I still don't know what the Phoenix identity is other than, you know, they're true to their word, they burn it down and start again. Like what?
Identity is we are not the Magic. That's their identity. That's their whole thing. We're not Magic.
Yeah, the Magic were good.
Yes. I'm afraid Mahmoud Abject Failure, that's the correct pronunciation, was just not very good. He just wasn't very good. And I would look at the players' body language and they were getting subbed out. You know, guys like Jonah Bolden. I don't think Jonah Bolden would have minded playing 20 minutes if they had been, say, in two lots of 10 minutes or, you know, overlapping, say, halfway through the first quarter, halfway through the second, halfway through the third, halfway through the fourth. But when your 20 minutes is comprised of 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, minute and a half there, you can't get any rhythm, you can't get any groove. And I think from what I can gather from sources, including Hollandaise and Ketchup, that Jalen Adams was allowed to get away with a bit too much. And that's where Angus Glover got a little bit pissed off and called him out for not playing defense. And then the result of that was that Abject Failure took it out on Angus Glover instead of saying, hey, here's somebody that's supporting the sort of culture that we want. So, yeah, that was a mess.
It felt like he was still in the G League mindset, yes. You know, just managing people and just letting the major guys
look at the way he coached. Look at the way he coached that, and that was very G League coaching, which is I'm putting this group on, and the NBA scouts can have a look at them. Now we're gonna go get this guy out and get this bloke in, let him have a bit of a run around, so see if he can push his cause for. And that was real G League coaching. There was really never we're here to win. We're going for a three-peat. I've inherited a two-time champion, and we're going for that. That's never what it was. It was always people. I mean, some of the starting lineups were abominable. Sean Bruce 1 week. Starts next week 3 minutes. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah. And an Australian league, an Australian sort of cultured team would see somebody like Glover and just go, yeah, that's the guy we want.
Yes.
You know, he's going in with a chip on his shoulder. He's fired up. Like, that's the Australian way to play. And just totally lost it on Abdul.
So what else? What about the next question was, what was the fail, like a league fail? Andrew, what did you see as a league fail?
League fail? You asking me?
Yeah, putting me on the spot?
Okay.
Yeah, because we had the great success of the Japanese adventure. So what was the fail?
I think the league's fail was killing the loyal fan who watched multiple games with those stupid ads, as you said, for the No Bull Tour, and maybe even getting Scottie Pippen out for two of the worst games ever. Yes. That whole NBA, and maybe I'm going to go out now, I'm on a rant, and just the fact that they think Scottie Pippen is that much of a draw card I don't know who they're targeting at. Are they targeting at the teenagers of today or old men like me who remember who Scottie Pippen was? It just didn't make sense.
I didn't get the whole thing because Horace Grant was in the first three-peat where the centre was Bill Cartwright. Okay? And in the second three-peat, it was Dennis Rodman when the centre was Luke Longley. So I didn't see what the crossover was between what great stories and insights was Luke and Horace going to provide about each other. That'd be sweet bugger all. Really, have we not heard it all already?
Mm. Yep.
But to get it flogged, I'm with you, to get it flogged twice a game, every game, you know, as soon as that ad would come on the bottom of the screen, I just mute it until the ad was gone. Then I turn the sound back on.
So that was my biggest fail. Body, did you have is that your biggest fail too, Body? Are we aligned on that or have you got something else?
I think that my fail is at the league's inability to recognise what works and what doesn't. And putting commentators back in the stadiums worked. So why they only did that on a part-time basis or on selected games, it's like, it's stupid. Like we don't have COVID. We don't have a situation now where you have to be actually calling the game from a studio where you're watching a screen, which is exactly the same as the viewers. So you can't give any insight on something. Like you'd see a foul or something happening off the ball, and if the camera's not on it, they can't tell you what's going on. And their inability to keep you informed when they're not in the venue, when they can see it, smell it, taste it, you know, you've got some opportunities to do it all the time.
All right, Buddy, I wanted to move on to this one. Biggest story of the NBL 24 season, in your opinion, biggest story that didn't get a lot of press, that didn't become a big story?
Well, I broke a story that the New Zealand Breakers were in financial difficulty back on January the 8th. And Matt Walsh, who was the owner of the Breakers that size, came out and disputed it and said, no, everything's hunky-dory. That was Matt Walsh disputing it from Phoenix, Arizona, I believe, because he hadn't been in New Zealand all season. And from what I understood, would have difficulty if he went into New Zealand. So we saw him at the NBA game when the New Zealand Breakers played the NBA NBL preseason game. He was at that. And we saw him in Sydney and Wollongong when the Breakers reached those play-in games. Mm. But there's issues there. And I think that was a big story that got ignored. And I was really disappointed with the working media, which I'm not. I'm retired. I just stumble on stuff because people still ring me up and tell me things. And I'm trying to say, look, piss off, I'm trying to write a book here. But they're saying, but the Breakers are going to fall out. Oh, all right, and tell me about it. And a couple of reporters who shall remain nameless did get in touch with me, and I offered them the numbers of the minority owners of the Breakers and past players who were willing to go on the record. And instead, what they did was just ring up Matt Walsh and say, Matt, there's a story going around that your club's in trouble. Is that true? He said, no. Oh, okay, thanks very much. End of story. You know, when you've got your coach handing out the airline tickets to the players when you're going on a trip, and, you know, you, there's something going on. But nobody wanted to investigate it in case they found something.
Mm-hmm. The only hitch in this thing, Body, is the fact that Matt Walsh was at a golf tournament in New Zealand, I want to say a couple of weeks ago. He got at me on Twitter. I asked the question, when was the last time in New Zealand? And he replied, I was at a golf tournament. Now, he could be lying on Twitter. I don't know. I haven't bothered to verify it. But just to say, that's the only hitch in the plan.
All I'm saying is it should have been properly investigated, because it was definitely, where there was smoke, there was definitely fire. But everyone just was content to just wave the smoke around and go, no, there's nothing there. And, okay, you know, we'll see, you know, what happens. We'll see if a William McDowell White sticks around.
What we've got here is, again, basically we're of one mind. And I think this goes to show that we are Australia's three leading basketball commentators, because we're all singing from the same hymn book. My concern is the sandy financial foundation that teams in this league are built upon in general. So Body nailed in on the Breakers. I'm thinking about the investments that were made in the Melbourne United recently. I'm thinking about SEN and the Perth Wildcats ownership. I'm wondering how the Hawks are still alive without a sponsor. I just wonder how strong are these teams really, and how strong are the backers? the teams have a lot of these sort of interesting individuals investing in them, and it doesn't give me a lot of strength. Sort of, it brings back, I'm getting firepower and those sort of vibes coming through just gently. I'm nervous.
I had this in my notes to you guys as a topic. Gorgon versus Tatum. What's the bigger upgrade? Going from Jakomas in Illawarra to now Tatum, who's done very well, or Mahmood to Gorgon in Sydney? What's the bigger upgrade? And what does Gorgon mean? I guess speaking more broadly about Gorgon, what does he mean in his return to the NBL and Australian basketball?
So I think the Gorgon upgrade is bigger from a broader perspective. He brings a gravitas. He has a reputation. Yeah. That is huge, okay? But I think my worry is, do the current crop of players, the 20-somethings now, will they respond to his style of communication? Because I just don't know. I'm not sure whether you want to get coached by a 70-year-old when you're 20. I just don't know if it resonates. Like, I know there's some people that I work with from time to time and they're old, and I'm like, what the hell are you on about, man? I'm talking to Boddy right now and I don't understand half the stuff he's saying.
Yeah. Neither do I.
Like, so will Gorgon work?
I think the Tatum move was huge, and I think that's going to be successful. But I've got to agree with young Andrew that on a broader perspective, in terms of Sydney being the big city, that, you know, when you sign the Olympic coach, that's, and the most successful coach in the history of the NBL, that can only be a positive. Now, if we look at it, I'm going to catch up with him. He's going to be in Adelaide in a week or so's time doing clinics, and we're going to catch up, which I'm really looking forward to, because I want to ask him why he's even bothering. Because at 70, you've pretty much done everything. What is left? You know, Sydney has won two championships a year ago. What is there to do? So is it just that he just loves coaching so much that he wants to be involved? And fair enough, if that's it and he's got passion and energy for it, good luck to him. But really, I would be in that situation, I would just be hiring myself out as a consultant, you know, going and doing some clinics for coaches, mainly for coaches, teaching them how to communicate, how to teach the X's and O's, how to have relationships with your players. You know, that's an area that's lacking. And we have coaches get taught X's and O's and skills, but how do you deal with the player? How do you deal with the star player, the guy that's not getting any court time? You know, there's so much that he has access to and experience of that I would just, if I was in his situation, I wouldn't be taking this on. I would be a consultant. But then, you know, I've always been a little bit lazy, so maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's peculiar. I mean, he's at an advanced age, and it would appear that the only sad fact about him coming back with the Kings is the fact that we probably won't see him in commentary, which could have been a fun exercise.
I've got a recording of a game, the VBA final between Melbourne Tigers, coached by Lindsay Gaze, assisted by Brett Brown, against the Geelong Supercats. And Bruce Palmer and Brian Gorgon call that game. It's a video of the game. And what happened, they had an esky and they just kept being supplied with huge amounts of alcohol. And the longer you listen to that game, the funnier it gets. So the fact that we don't get him on commentary, we actually are missing out on something.
I have a follow-up question for Boddy, and it's through his networks. He'll probably be aware of this. Does he have any idea if Brad has a chance of becoming assistant coach to Brian Gorgon next season?
Well, he's never done it before. it's well overdue. Actually, just before we do go, the question we haven't, the area we haven't discussed, because this is not really the topic, but I think it's worth mentioning, is the Olympics are coming up. What do we think? Are we improving on a bronze medal, or are we heading for great disappointment?
I think we're in a world of hurt. I think we've reached our zenith. There's another word for you, Boddy, zenith.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a nephew named Zenith.
That's our best. Yeah. We've reached our best, and I think it was all downhill from here for quite a while. I think we continue to look at the American game and try and compete with that, and I think the real power is back the way we used to play, which was a team-based pass the ball offense.
A hybrid.
So I think
a hybrid game of Europe and America.
Yeah, like watching like Latvia at the last tournament was just a beautiful thing to watch.
Which I had to do, mind you, every game. Surrounded by relatives.
Oh, right. I thought you were Hungarian.
I am, but I'm married into Latvia.
Oh, right, okay. So yeah, I just think the Boomers have had their run, and now we're going to be sort of middle of the pack for the next for the foreseeable future.
I think we're going to struggle. I think that the Americans are going to send a real team. You know, no offense to the World Cup teams, but they're going to send a real team. So that's another team that's right there in the medal contention that they didn't get one. So if you've got three that can win medals and one of them's named USA, you know that one of them will be at the Olympics. So that puts us another rung down, I feel. Really, who's going well at the moment? Duop Reef, maybe? I don't know. You know, I can't see it. And this talk, the noise we get, the white noise we get from the NBL coverage about Chris Goulding or Dejan Vasiljevic or whatever, I don't think they're going to make any huge difference. We had the greatest scoring average of any international tournament, World Cup or Olympics, at the last World Cup, and we're talking about we need shooters. We need to be able to stop somebody. I don't see Brian going on after this. This is it. Like, this will be his full. So he doesn't have to care. But, I mean, he will go. I love Nick Kay, but Nick Kay's done. And if he's in the team, well, that's – I love the guy. And I love what he's brought, and I'll never go back on any of that. But, I mean, the future is not him. It's not Della Vadova. They carry on about, the form he's showing. He's not. That's not the way to go now. It just isn't. But I would suit up Aaron Baines. just to take out a couple of those international bastards. Hey, I've got one word for you as I go. Sayonara.
Hello, everyone out there. I hope you liked this episode, this conference call between myself, Boddy Nodge, and Andrew Kenny. A reminder, if you want more Boddy, listen to the Brad and Boddy podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, they do the WNBL and the NBL, so you get a bit of both. Andrew, you know where to follow him, and me. We'll be back probably at the end of the NBL grand final, just to put a complete neat little bow on the season. Thanks very much, everyone. See you next time.